Hello and welcome back to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to my podcast about the relevancy of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book, and let's begin. Thankfully, circumstances have allowed us to reach our 3-month anniversary on the show, so happy 3 months, you guys! To celebrate, I'm going to be adding new sound effects, soundtracks, and segments to the show. I want y'all to know that your input is highly, highly valued. I answer every single comment and email that I get on my inbox and on my blog. If you want to know where to find me, everything is in the show notes. Okay, I have one last spooky announcement before we start today's show. Every Friday this month, October, we are going to release a 13-minute episode about literature's spookiest books and authors. Not to give away any spoilers, but you may want to tune in for some literary classics, perhaps written by a mysteriously deceased poet and or a famous female author. Okay, enough of that. Let's dive in. The first thing I noticed when I started researching the Dewey Decimal System and the LC system was how endlessly complicated both of them were. So I tried to format this discussion in a way that was helpful and engaging, but also clear and concise enough for everyone to be able to understand. So the Dewey Decimal System, or the Dewey Decimal Classification, also called the DDC, is a system of organization for libraries, bookstores, and websites. According to the OCLC, which stands for the Online Computer Library Center, which is the company that owns the rights to the DDC and its affiliates, also the LC, as I later learned, the system was first published by Melville Dewey, big surprise there, in 1876, though the system is constantly under revision. And I cannot stress this enough, constant revision. It is also housed in the Library of Congress and translated into roughly 30 languages. Here's a quote directly from their website. Libraries in more than 135 countries use the DDC to organize and provide access to their collections, and DDC numbers are featured in the national bibliographies of more than 60 countries. Enough now about the history. Many of you, including me when I was putting this together, are still wondering, yes, but what is the Dewey Decimal System and why does it matter? Have you ever been to a school, neighborhood, or national library? If you have, and I'm sure that you will again, you are likely to notice signs around the library housing numbers from 000 to 900. Each set of numbers actually corresponds to a specific genre and subgenre as we get to the tens and ones digits. These numbers are separated into summaries on the OCLC website, the first of which considers the 10 main classes, which read as follows. Another quote from their website. 000 is computer science, information, and general works. 100, philosophy and psychology. 200, religion. 300, social sciences. 400, language. 500, science. 600, technology. 700, arts and recreation. 800, literature. 900, history and geography. The list goes on from there. All of these are also listed in the show notes. For each numbered category, then, are the 100 and 1,000 divisions, which I just mentioned. For obvious reasons, I won't continue by attempting to get through either of those for even one category. It's just too much to read. Now, the more specific the number, the more specific the topic. So if 200 is religion, and 220 is the Bible, then 221 is the Old Testament, and 221.4 might be something like Deuteronomy, which is a specific chapter in the Old Testament, depending on the library, though. The 200, 220, and 221 come from the OCLC, and then every subcategory from there can vary. Of course, as the system changes and perhaps delves into more layers of specificity, things will change, and we'll have to put Deuteronomy in 221.459, or something. Relevance? Knowing the basics of the Dewey Decimal System has now given you a means of navigation in any library, whether it be big or small, traditional or not. Over are the days of being embarrassed about asking a librarian or passerby a question about a book that's an arm's length away. Okay, but wait a minute. Have you ever been to an academic library before? A great example of this is the Bob's Library in New York City. We might have to do a digression within a digression, but trust me, it's all going to work out. Academic libraries, unlike other libraries such as K-12 libraries, use a system called LC, or the Library of Congress Classification System, to organize their stock. This information is from the OLLC, or the Online Library Learning Center, which is eerily similar to the OCLC, which, in addition to the website being a historical archive only, makes me think that they must be connected or run by the same company somehow. The first line generally has 2 to 3 letters, while the second line has a combination of around 4 numbers. Line number 3 is a combination of letters and numbers, referring to the first letter of the author's last name and the number in sequence or series. Finally, the last line, which always consists of 4 numbers, represents the date of publication. It's difficult to find much more about the LC system of organization, and the letter number systems are again much too extensive to read aloud, though it would be fun to walk back the cat on this one. Bookstores are a different beast altogether. Although some may adopt the DDC or LC systems of organization, they usually don't fit the bookstore format long term. More on this later. But there's another side to the spectrum here, and that is personal library organization. I know that owning tons of books isn't necessarily conducive to minimalism, but I would rather only wear one outfit for the rest of my life than get rid of my library. And that's pretty much the point it's come to. That's just a personal preference, though. My personal library has a bit under 200 books in it, and I use an app called LibraryThing to organize everything, especially since the majority of my books are back home while I'm living in Chicago. So every time I need to look up a book or make sure that I don't buy a book a second time, it's just right on my phone or computer or on the internet, and I can easily access every book in my library. There are also physical ways of organizing personal libraries, such as by color, by size, alphabetized by title or author, or setting it up by sections with different genres in them. Let me know if you want me to elaborate on this in a future episode, but now let's get back to bookstores. I want to leave you with another thought. Why aren't bookstores organized like libraries? Think about this. What is generally your goal when you go into a bookstore like Barnes & Noble or Foyles? You probably have one of two missions. One, you're looking for a specific book, whether it be for school, work, or personal use, or two, you want to browse. Let's start with item number one. Generally, customers come in knowing only a title and or author of a book that they want to find. The DDC, however, is a genre-based organization system. Riddle me this. What genre is next week's title, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks? History, science, social sciences, all of the above. Even if one had the technology to be able to locate the book that way, it would take immeasurably longer to find it under those circumstances. This is not a criticism of the DDC at all, just an acknowledgement that there are times and places for its proper use. Let's move on to item number two. Most bookstores, and there's an episode coming out about the best bookstores in the world soon, are organized in a highly visual manner. This can take on many forms, whether it includes color, shape, design, size, or a combination of the four. The DDC, while king in libraries for its functionality, wouldn't work with such constraints. Think of it this way. Bookstores, unlike libraries, have to sell you something. How do they do that? Through display. Authors cross genres, but in a bookstore, their collected works or what is available from them are all lumped into the same category. It's a way of saying, hey, you like Joan Didion? She wrote more than memoirs, you know. Another way to consider this is through location. If I wanted the best restaurants in LA, the bookstore is likely to put Lonely Planet LA and LA history books near the book that I wanted to find initially. It's a way to sell by using simplicity and, most importantly, proximity. There are a few reasons why this episode is so short, namely that we are having a total of 6 episodes this month, so I didn't want 2 huge episodes in the middle of the month and then all these shorter episodes at the end of the weeks. Also, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, our next book, is an extremely long episode. We get a lot out of that discussion, so I wanted to make that kind of a juxtaposition for you guys so that you had a short, quick bite of literature this week, and then in 2 weeks, this really great chunk of, I don't know, meat, for lack of a better term. Like I said before, the DDC and the LC, super interesting topics, and all of those links are down below, but I wanted to make sure that the information was quick and digestible enough for you to not get overwhelmed or confused, since this isn't a super popular topic. If you enjoyed the digression and would like to hear more from me, consider checking out the last episode where I discussed The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald with Priya Fink. Also, stay tuned for the next episode in 2 days' time. Here's the announcement we've all been waiting for. Drumroll, please. Our first Horrifying Classics episode will feature The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, and through that, explore the dark themes lurking behind Poe's side of history. I worked super hard on this mini-series for y'all, and I hope you enjoy it. Our next full-length episode, as mentioned previously, will be on Rebecca Skloot's The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. You guys are going to love my friend Kristen, who sat at the kitchen table with me to discuss that book. Still there? One more thing, then. Remember that leaving a comment or review on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. See you guys on Friday.